This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. So when I came up to the room here, I was curious, given the scope of choices that you all have for this session, who is going to show up for such a jazzy subject as effective administrative writing? And then when I watched the administrative timber come in through the door, my curiosity turned to concern. So I want to first dispel a myth. You are either born as a writer, or you just can't write. The truth is, this is a myth. The truth is that writing is a skill, and like other skills, writing can be learned. It's not that any of us should just say, "Well, I wasn't born to write. Tough luck." This is a skill that can be learned. I was not born with a hammer in my hand, but I did learn to use a hammer. I grew up on a farm. My father probably wished I would have had a plow in my hand, but I took hammer in hand and learned to use one. So writing is just like learning to use a hammer. When you take a hammer in hand, you need the right hammer for your age, and then you also need to be able to flick the wrist, and then you need to learn to take a full strike and let the hammer do the work, and it's all just a matter of learning how to use a hammer. But the point is that it doesn't matter so much whether I'm born with a hammer in my hand or with a plow in hand. It's not in the genes. It's in what we teach ourselves and what we learn to do. And so in case you're saying, "Oh, writing is hard work, it's just not anything I can do, I'm poor at it, I'll never be better, and so I'll duck it and avoid it as much as I can, and when I can't, whatever feeble effort I make is the best I can do." That's a myth. You can learn. Just like you can learn to swing a hammer, you can learn to use words effectively. Words, just like hammers, are tools. They're tools that we use to conduct business and administration and so on, and communicate. And so we can learn to use them and use them effectively. There are specific steps that we can follow to learn to use words better. And understanding these specific steps is what this session is all about. So, as an overview, there are three different aspects to this little talk this afternoon. The first is reader-centered writing. A few thoughts about reader-centered writing as compared to writer-centered writing. And then the five steps of writing a letter. And I use the term letter as in that applies to an email or all other kinds of communication. In my generation, we talked about writing letters. And then 10 keys to readable writing. So the first thought about reader-centered writing is this. What does it mean to learn to write from the reader's perspective? Usually, we are so oriented or focused on what we want to say that we're thinking in terms of this is what I want to say, and we give too little thought to how will this be received by the reader. See, there are this would be a whole other subject, but just the way there are different personality types and they kind of like fall into four broad categories, there are also different reader types that fall into four broad categories. And so the likelihood is that when you write something, there's a 75% chance that the reader will receive information differently from the way you write it. And so be conscious of how it comes across to the reader, how you're presenting it, how he will receive it. And then I'd also like, we'll talk a little bit about this, but just a theme I would like for us to think about in this age of information overload. The opportunity that we have when we write something, the opportunity we have for to induce the reader to read it is very brief, unless it's a letter from the boss and you will need to carry that out or else. Then you have a very brief moment of time to capture the attention of the reader, or it'll be laid aside until later. And you know when does later come? Never. Do you read everything you receive? Do you have ways of sorting through what's going to be worth reading or not? So let's think about when we write that this is what the reader is thinking. So let's first, I'll put it this way, use plain English, not fog. Learn to use clear, concise words. As compared to fog, I mean the frequency of gobbledygook. So plain English, as use words that will be understood the first time. That seems fairly elementary. We often don't do this. Use plain English, words that can be understood the first time. We often don't for a variety of reasons. We'll get into some of those. And the frequency of gobbledygook is just the imprecise, unclear wording we often use, and it fills up the page, so we've done our duty. And the missive is either sent off in the mail with a stamp or with a click, and there's no response like you intended, because often it's the frequency of the gobbledygook. So administrative writing is written communication of business-like information. Administrative writing is not literature. Now, I never took a course in creative writing, but I think that in creative writing, you are taught to use words that evoke emotion, to make the reader laugh, to make the reader cry, use words that make them ponder. What does this really mean? I have read business and administrative writing that evoked those emotions for me, but for the wrong reason. You get letters from mega corporations that make you laugh, and you get letters that make you want to cry when you think about the way in which they're written. But just remember that administrative writing is not literature. It's not creative writing. It's the opposite. So forget about writing in a way that will evoke emotions and think about writing in a way that is clear and precise. Your readers read administrative writing for two reasons, and two reasons only. It's not for entertainment. What are you trying to tell me? What do you want me to do about it? So, another way to do reader-centered writing is to write like you talk. I do this sometimes. If I sit down to write a letter, and it's going to be a proposal, or I want to make a point, or I want to ask something of someone, I imagine myself, if I were in their presence, what would I say to them? And then just write that down. Just the way you would talk. Write like you were making a verbal proposal. Would you say to someone, if you were in their presence, enclosed, please find, attached hereto, pursuant to, who says pursuant to? It's legal language. It's not administrative language. Notwithstanding. Notwithstanding is one of my favorite words to pick on, because I think, at least from what I could dredge up, notwithstanding is the only single multiple syllable words that has more syllables than the three words you could use in place of it. Notwithstanding. How about just saying in spite of? But you get the gist here. Okay, so write to create a response. If there is a specific response you want the reader to take, then write toward that response. Focus on that anticipated result and write toward it. Like if let's say if you're going to write a letter for in this case, let's use a business illustration. If you're going to write a letter that the price is going up, so you can write a letter that says, "Dear John, the price is going up. Thank you. Sincerely, Paul." So what is actually the response that you want when you send news that the price is going up? Please continue to buy from me. Please. But there's better ways to say it than that. But we're writing toward a response, not just to deliver a message. So focus on that response and write toward it. And we've already talked that not all readers alike, not all readers receive information alike. Here's something. Make it skimmable. Use things like bullet points, bold fonts, and so on. If you have in front of you a document that has a sea of words, and it's very precise and it's very wordy and it says exactly what it means to communicate, and you have a document that has some bullet points and a few bold lines in it, to which are you drawn? Which will you say, I'm going to follow the rule that we always ought to follow, is when you pick up a piece of paper, deal with it the first time, don't lay it aside, because then you'll have to pick it up again and reorient yourself, so deal with it the first time. But we often don't, because of the time it's going to take to sort through all of this. And so make your writing skimmable, so that, do you read every line of every communication you get? You really just want to know, first of all, in those first all-important 15 seconds, the decision will be made. Am I going to read this in a meaningful way? So make it skimmable and communicate in those key points, the bullet points and the bold font, however, make it draw the reader into it. And communicate what this is going to be about, and that there is more information that he would like to have and should have. Okay, so then write your opening statement. A question, I'll throw this out, a question or a startling fact. So again, knowing that you will have only this brief period of time in which somebody will decide, all right, am I going to read this or not? For example, if I were selling, what gutter guard is? I barely know it, but you put it on top of your gutter. So what if you would say, start by saying, did you know that the primary cause of foundations collapsing is clogged gutters. Something like this, you know. And so you have to like adjust this to your situation, but you can arrest attention by that first line to make this a document that is appealing to be read. And then what you're doing there is creating, drawing them in, and allowing some time to process and then lead into your message. That may not be the main message, but it buys you time to draw the reader into the main message. Okay, so this is just some thoughts on reader-centered writing. Now, the next section is on the five steps of writing a letter. So you are probably going to say, I know this. But think about it. Here are five steps. Plan, research, organize, draft, and edit. The reason writing is often such hard work is that we do not follow these five steps. What often happens, at least to me, is that I will sit there. The cursor is blinking. The sheet of paper is blank, and that first line has to be written. Dear John, and it's just hard to get started in a meaningful way. So you sit there, and it's hard work, and you labor over this, and then often all of a sudden there comes that time it starts to come, and then the writing flows, and what has actually happened is that you've gone through 1 and 2 and 3 mentally, and now you're at 4, you're drafting it. So what if you would consciously go through 1 and 2 and 3, and then when you get to 4, the work is that the lifting isn't so heavy because you've consciously gone through 1, 2, or 3. And you will find that 1, 2, and 3 are more easy, and you'll get to 4 more quickly. So plan your writing. Okay, how do you plan your writing? Define your purpose. Your purpose is your reason for writing, and make sure that your purpose is clear and persuasive and polite. State your message, your intended response. Your message may be more indirect, or it can be more blunt, but plan ahead. So what I do is this. I will create this blurb, if you will, about what is it that I'm trying to communicate. And I establish that in mind first. And remember the example of writing a letter about the prices going up. Okay, that's the purpose of your writing in that case is that the price is going up. But the message is not the price is going up. The message is please continue to buy from us. Or the message is, let us continue to serve you. That's a better way to say it. So let us continue to serve you. So don't confuse the purpose with the message. Because if you only state the purpose and not the message, then you will often find yourself only communicating part of the message and forgetting to write toward the response, because you're working toward a response when you write. So plan your writing. Before you begin the letter, jot down your purpose. Now, I've given this talk at other places, and I can like see the resistance rising. And say, well, wait, it is such hard work to write. And so you're telling me that I need to write about what I am going to write. Well, okay, but at least do it mentally. Or jot down the purpose, and then jot down your message. Short, succinct actions you wish your reader to take. And then research the writing. Gather the relevant information. We'll continue with the example of the prices going up. It doesn't, and this is just an example. But let's say the price is going up, and so you're going to write this letter, and you're writing it to your largest customer. And so you begin writing, and then, how much is the price going up? Actually, how much did that customer buy last year? Or let's say in the administrative world, maybe you'll have to fit it to your situation. So once you begin writing, if you don't plan ahead and do your research, now you have to stop. And then you go do the research. And so you go open the file drawer, or you click on another file folder, and you find that information. And then that reminds you, that's right, I wonder what about, okay, that was John's company, what about Joe's company? And so you gather all that information, and you get it together, and now you have to go back and restart writing. And so before you ever begin the draft, plan what you want to write, summarize that at least in your mind, and then do the research so all the information is in hand before you begin writing. Before you begin the letter, gather the data, information necessary to reference for the reader. If you think the reader is going to wonder about this, then as the communicator, put it into the letter so that he doesn't have to go do the research. And then organize your writing. Step three is to organize it. Now, I have this, I call this chaining, is one. It's basically just questions and answers. Ask yourself this question. So, who does this letter affect? And in this case, let's say that this is a letter from a printing mission. So this letter affects missions who distribute our literature. So what is this letter about? Okay, this letter is about introducing a new Bible study series. Why are we introducing a new Bible study series? We updated our existing series. Where are we making them available? In the U.S. and in English-speaking countries. When will they be ready to ship? July 1, 2019. But this is just just Q&A. Just answer the questions. You also made this slide because I thought it's called clustering, and it makes a very nice slide. And so this is just another way of doing the same thing. It really doesn't matter whether you use an outline with Roman numerals and capital A and then number one and then small a. It doesn't matter. However you do it, just outline it or organize it so that the information is all there and it flows. But in clustering, you do the same thing. The question is who, what, why, where, and when. It's Literature Ministries. We're introducing a new series. It's because we've updated the series. It's available in the U.S. and overseas, and it's available on July 1, 2019. Okay, take a look at those circles and the information underneath. It is amazing how much administrative communication goes into the mail or is sent in other ways that does not include all of that. And so the readers will read it, and because there are still unanswered questions, they will not act upon the information that you sent to them because they'll have to ask more questions. It's not all, the information's not all there. So just discipline yourself to organize what you're going to write, and it'll flow naturally and communicate well. And then draft the letter. So, getting started. Writer's block. Writer's block comes from, you know, being overwhelmed with, how am I going to, what all this do I need to have in this document? Well, you see, if you've actually planned it and you've done your research and you've organized it, now that it's time to write it, there's no block there where you still have to do all of this because it's all there and all you need to do is begin to write. Because you've removed that sense of being overwhelmed with everything. So you can overcome writer's block by preparing properly. Also, break your writing into sections. Do the easiest section first. Do you always read every letter in the exact, like from the top to the bottom? Because the postal police will show up if you don't read the letter in the right order. Yeah, the punchline is going to be in the last sentence, so you just look at the last sentence. There's no rule that says you have to write the first sentence first. I often end up writing the first sentence last. I mean, that's like these days of this isn't that these are different days from when we used typewriters or we wrote by hand. And so once you wrote it, it was there. So you had to think all this out. These days you can cut and paste and change, you know, endlessly. And it's only at the very end that you hit the button to print or to send. So write whatever comes easiest first. And so sometimes as you write that, then that'll kind of like lead naturally to the harder things that you weren't quite sure how to say. Percolate. Unfortunately, because so much of our written communication is hard work, we put it off until we're in a deadline bind. And so now we have to write it and get it out there. But if you have time, allow it to percolate and build writer's tension. Turn like form the even like write if you can write the letter and not print it or print it, however, and then not send it right away, and turn the thoughts over in your mind. In particular, if you have a day, just read it and go to bed, and sleep for a night, and read it again in the morning, and things will come to you that you did not put into this, or better ways of saying it. This will all kind of, because it kind of percolates, and it just, it's like well percolated coffee. It's much better if you give it that time to percolate properly. Brainstorm with a friend. Like just talk with someone. Hey, here's what I'm going to write. I'm going to say to them so and so, and just that talking, that turning over of ideas, will also help improve the content. Sometimes just take a break, just do something else for. If you don't have overnight, at least take a 10-minute break. Do something else, or do another. Lay this aside, do something else, and then come back to it. And now don't do it while you're in the middle of the stream of thought. But once you're at the end, then take a break. And then come back to it. And then, of course, the all-important first line. We've talked about using for their first line like a startling statement. There's also things like you can use a colliding idea. You can say things like, some people say that lean beef tastes better than marbled beef. Others like, of course, beef well marbled, but we found that what's more important is the quality of the feed by our organic corn. You know, so you see what I'm saying there? Just two colliding ideas, a startling fact, or something that all... And write the first line last. If you think, well, I can't come up with some... Well, okay, write the rest of the letter, and then at the end, I mean, wait until tomorrow morning, and then write the first line. Now, I'm going to at least touch on this formatting the parts of a business letter. Just format it properly, and you will find at the end of your handout there is an example of a letter with the different parts shown. And I'm not going to condescend or speak condescendingly to you and say, let's go through those parts of the letter first. I'm only going to point out one of them. Always put on the date. So never forget to include the date. Did I say always add the date. It's amazing how much information that is actually time-sensitive arrives with no date on it. One of the good things about email is that there's an automatic timestamp on it. So draft the letter, format it properly, and then edit the letter. So remove yourself from the writing. Let it cool until tomorrow. Write to express, not to impress. Structure sentences from the viewpoint of the reader. We've covered some of this. Get input from others. Judge the writing, not yourself. Remove yourself and judge the writing. And don't be defensive if your friends read your letter and say, that is really bad. Okay, that's actually what you wanted from them, is feedback. So don't be defensive. Don't make the writing this personal extension of yourself. But you're communicating with words. And so get some space in there between yourself and also some space time-wise. And then take a more detached view of the letter. So, effective administrative writing is as much about organization as it is creativity or being born with the ability to write. It's about organization. When you plan, then research, then organize, then draft the letter, you will find there is 50% less editing to do, because you've just followed this disciplined process. The rest of the time, I would like to talk about these 10 keys to readable writing. You know, like readable writing, ways to make your writing more readable. Okay, we're going to cover, in the time that's left, these 10. Choose the most familiar words, eliminate jargon, build a foundation with keywords, highlight and organize visually, give your reader frequent breaks, make it easy to read, use clear, simple words, remove redundant words, avoid cliches, and use an active voice. Okay, now we're not going to be able to cover all of these into the same level, but at least hit on all of these areas of abuse in our writing. So first, key number one, choose the most familiar words. Use short words wherever possible. Earlier, there was a line that said, write to express, not to impress. We sometimes use words that are much more ponderous than they need to be because we're trying to impress, and we will sacrifice expression for impression. Use short words wherever possible. Accordingly, say so. The ramification, the result. Experts say use 1.5 syllables per word in every 100 words. On average, you should be using about 1.5 syllables per word. So if you're thinking, how will I ever know this? I mean, Microsoft Word had builds this right into your software. I'm assuming you're aware of these features, where you can like test the readability. You can grade on what grade level you're writing and so on like that. So, and that's not part of this talk here, but it's in there. Just Google it and you'll find it. But you want the maximum readability to the widest possible audience. Winston Churchill generally wrote on a level that an 11-year-old could read well. That's what he was aiming for, that 11-year-old level. So right on the correct grade level. And again, there are ways to measure this. By the way, does someone know what, for example, the Reader's Digest? What level is the Reader's Digest written on? That's less than that.
Six.
Grade six. Yeah. So the New York Times, I think grade 12. Your average daily newspaper, probably grade 8 or 9. So just be aware that you can write on different grade levels. And there is no... Now, if I address the students of Faith Builders, I actually aim a little bit higher. But generally, the rule to follow is just stay at the sixth grade level, seventh grade level, eighth grade. That level is what we're generally used to reading, and there are ways to measure this. Like there's the you can Google all of this, but I'll just mention there's a FLESH, FLESCH reading ease score, and it tells you that things like scientific journals are written on a much higher level. You have the average number of syllables per 100 words is 192 in scientific journals. And that's very difficult reading. And then you can just move up the scale there. And I'm not going to bore you with going through all of that. It's all there. Just be aware of the principle. Write on a level that is understandable. For those of you that are public speakers, preachers and teachers, this applies as well. Eliminate jargon. So what is jargon? Special words or expressions that are used by a particular profession or group that are difficult for others to understand. When I was working at CAM, I once signed a birthday card. We would have birthday cards for that when someone's birthday came, and so I signed it, and I said, thank you for the wonderful work you do for BSS in PRD. Ow! Now, you have to actually work there in order to know what that was all about. But I guess it's okay to say, after the U.S. Army, CAM probably has more acronyms than...
I'm sure they come in seconds.
But in an organization, they use acronyms. But be careful how you use jargon, acronyms, abbreviations, unless they're very common. Be careful how you use them. When you use them, write it out the first time, and put in parentheses what the acronym means. Because if you write a letter that says uses the term EPA, let's say, your reader, for reasons of pride, is not going to call up and say, you used the acronym EPA, what does that mean? Because they're afraid you're going to say Environmental Protection Agency, dummy. And so they're not going to. And so write it out the first time. And then remember that it takes at least 3 strikes until you actually remember it. If you are like me, you often find yourself having to go back and reading it again just to make sure you know what that acronym meant. So write to impress, express, not to impress. Build a foundation of keywords. What I mean here is repeat keywords. 3 to 5 exposures. Give it a theme. Now, I've been preaching for longer than you probably even are interested in, but I used to be very concerned about not repeating myself. That has completely gone away. Most of it, because of information overload and the bombardment that hits us all the time, many of us can't remember what was preached last Sunday. And so it's actually what's memorable are the themes. So build a foundation of keywords, a theme, and repeat that theme. So remember, even in a letter, don't just say it. Well, you may have to say it once. Build a theme. Repeat the key words. We've already talked about highlight and organize visually. Here's one. Use parallel words to help readers remember points. If there's 3 bullet points, say that make them all verbs. Let's say I saw this for a printer where research organized. They were all verbs. So. Or if you're going to start one word that ends with ing, make the rest end in ing as well. Use those parallel. That makes it memorable. Give your reader frequent breaks. Avoid run-on sentences. Have you ever started reading a sentence and the sentence kind of went on and you actually captured the thought that they started with and then they went on to another thought and then you had to put that thought on hold because now you were thinking about this and finally you felt like you were on a train and you wanted to get off, but it just never stopped. Okay. When you communicate with those run-on sentences, that's how it feels like, and that's about how good they remember the first point by the time you get to the last point. That's what commas and periods are for. Shorten your paragraphs, keep them easy to read. Use clear, simple words. Pursuant to your instructions, we have enclosed a photographic reproduction of the original purchase order. Why not just say, here's a copy of the PO you asked for? Or, please indicate below the color you have a preference for. Now, choose the color you want. Use no more words than necessary. And there's a number of them listed here. Eliminate repetitions. This is one of something I find myself doing all the time, and it's a constant annoyance in your writing to me if I see this, okay? Assemble together. So you assemble a part? Yeah. It's red in color. Like, can it be red in flavor? Or what are the choices here? Here's one we are frequently guilty of, the general consensus. I mean, isn't the consensus kind of like general? So uniquely different. Okay. How exactly are you different uniquely? Make your writing more alive by avoiding dead words and just take out those overused cliches. Restate non-business-like metaphors. When we, more than we believe, we use cliches, we use metaphors, we use figures of speech, and then when we go to write, we tend to use the same words. Let's grab the bull by the horns. Okay, now that's okay if you're talking verbally, but when you put it on paper, it doesn't flow well. So let's hash it. Let's discuss. Instead, say, I know where you're coming from. No, say, I understand. And then there are some really gross ones that you sometimes see in print. I don't want to open a can of worms. Now, I personally find it hard enough to open a can of live bait. And so this can of worms like draws up that image of cooking supper and open up a can of worms. Not in business-like administrative writing. And there are others you could come up with as well. So avoid... another thing is the jumbled cliches where... or mixed metaphors that are often accidental, but they're non-professional. This comes from the Chicago Tribune. So now that what we are dealing with is the rubber meeting the road, and instead of biting the bullet on the issues, we just want to punt. Now, that's a pretty remarkable achievement of getting at least three in one sentence. So I'm going to... What do we have? Are we at the end? 3 minutes. Okay, so I have a number of areas of or jumbled cliches that I hear, and I just want to remind ourselves of, please let's not use, because we tend to say these things and we don't think of how it actually sounds or is actually how it looks in writing even more so. It's time to, this is a real one. It's time to grab the bull by the horns and look him in the eye. Grab the bull by the tail and look him in the eye. Okay. Maybe contortionists. He's a wolf in cheap clothing. I wouldn't eat that with a 10-foot pole. I'd take a long arm. To do that. It's as easy as falling off a piece of cake. Or why don't you take a flying hike? You get the idea. There's this, we jumble these things because we don't pay attention, and then they actually end up in our writing. Just don't use them. Avoid cliches. And in closing, last point, use active voice. Now, this is not a lesson in grammar here. This is a very simple thing. Just think about it this way. The active voice says who does what. The passive voice says what was done without saying by whom. So, for example, the check was mailed today. Or saying, I mailed the check today. Writing in passive voice makes your writing vague, it denies responsibility, and it creates an artificial distance between the writer and the reader. Now, there are times when the passive voice is important. If the boss made a mistake, then it's better to use the passive voice and say, a mistake was made. But if it was you that made the mistake, then it's better to write in active voice and say, I made a mistake. But if you think about it, dear Mr. Miller, your check was forwarded today. It should be received by April 20. If it has not been received by that date, our office should be contacted. Or, I forwarded your check today. You should receive it by April 20. If you have not received it by that date, contact me, Bob Jones. Active voice inspires confidence. Passive voice communicates vagueness. Not sure who's going to do what. I trust that this time we've spent together this afternoon will help us in our administrative writing to plan, research, organize, draft, edit, use short, concise sentences with easy-to-read words that get quickly to the point for this reason. We are growing the kingdom of God. We are advancing the kingdom of God. Let us do it effectively with our words as well as with all our other actions. Thank you.
This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.